Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, New York City, this is Lee Zishi. I use she and her pronouns, and you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live from the new WBAI studios, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. Today, we are joined by Iyapa, Stylianos, and Shay to talk about how right now Con Edison and National Grid are trying to raise our rates in order to build pipelines in Queens, the Bronx, and North Brooklyn. We're going to be talking to them about how their group's Extinction Rebellion are shutting down construction and how the Democratic Socialist Eco-Socialist Working Group is looking to take over those corporate utilities. But first, we have the headlines with Simone Norman.
As the number of coronavirus cases in New York continues to climb, including among New Yorkers who have not been abroad, Governor Cuomo declared a state of emergency on Saturday in order to allow health officials to obtain necessary resources more quickly. Cuomo has also criticized the federal government's handling of the crisis, pointing to mixed messages from the CDC and other agencies. The New York State Legislature has passed an emergency bill allocating $40 million to combat the novel coronavirus. While the bill passed with significant majorities in both chambers, some legislators expressed concern that the bill significantly expands the governor's power by granting the position unlimited authority to rule by executive order during any declared state emergency. After at least one teacher reported symptoms of the virus after being in a class with students, the city announced a new protocol to test all teachers who've been to coronavirus hot zones. The MTA announced a new plan to increase the frequency of subway car cleanings in order to limit the spread of the virus. The New York Department of State scheduled a public hearing on cease and desist protections after a push from small homeowners and State Senator Julia Salazar's office. Such protections would fine and punish predatory house flippers from contacting homeowners within cease and desist zones. The New York City Council has begun its review of Mayor de Blasio's proposed $95.3 billion budget. The council is asking the administration to find more agency efficiencies and savings and to fund the council's own priorities. Budget negotiations may be especially tricky this year as the city faces $1.4 billion in cuts and cost shifts from the state, mostly stemming from Governor Andrew Cuomo's proposed Medicaid overhaul. In his first interview since leaving the MTA, Andy Byford says that interference from Andrew Cuomo made the job somewhat intolerable. The NYPD is manipulating data to make it look like last year's bail reform caused a spike in crime, according to a group of public defenders who point out that while arrests are up, their caseloads are actually down. And in election news, the Working Families Party announced a slate of endorsements for progressive challengers in this year's races for New York State Legislature, including NYC DSA endorsed Marcella Matanes in Sunset Park. Also endorsed were Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas in Jackson Heights and Amanda Septimo in the Bronx. They also endorsed incumbent Joe Lentol in Williamsburg. With a Democratic presidential primary down to essentially two candidates, Senator Bernie Sanders and ex-Vice President Joe Biden, New York politicians who endorse other candidates are considering shifting their support. Councilmember Brad Lander, who had supported Senator Elizabeth Warren, endorsed Sanders. Former state senator and IDC member Jesse Hamilton, who lost his seat to Zelnor Myrie in 2018, will challenge state assembly member Diana Richardson in this year's primary. Former NYC Mayor Michael Bloomberg won a decisive victory in the American Samoa caucuses on Super Tuesday and then promptly dropped out of the race. In total, he won approximately 61 delegates, or roughly one for every $9 million he spent on political ads during his campaign.
Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc. My name is Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns, and today we are talking about we're talking about how New Yorkers are fighting back against corporate utilities Con Ed and National Grid from building frack gas pipelines in our community. We'll be talking with Extinction Rebellion about how they are actually shutting down that construction, and the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group about how their plans for public power will actually take these utilities over and put them back into the public's hands. So I want to introduce our guests. Let's first start with you, Iyapa. Can you talk a little bit about how you got involved in DSA and what you do within DSA? Yeah.
Hi, everyone. My name is Iyapa Saidi-Dupac. I've been officially with DSA for about a year now. I've been DSA curious for a while. I think it was Bernie, the 2016 campaign with Bernie kind of woke me up to everything and activated me as an activist. So currently I am with the Eco-Socialist Working Group and also with the Anti-War Working Group. I am currently leading on the media committee, but I also am very involved with the canvassing and being on the streets and talking to people and helping with town halls. We have a lot of events. I'm really excited for this new cycle and helping our working group expand, because it's expanding really fast. And we just launched our Brooklyn Eco-Socialist chapter last week. It was a big turnout.
And next, from the Eco-Socialist Working Group, we also have Stylianos. Could you talk a little bit how you've got involved and what you do within DSA?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Stylianos Karolidis. I've been involved with DSA for a little bit less than a year, and I actually got really involved in the Eco-Socialist Working Group thanks to a comrade who reached out to me. I'd expressed some interest, and he said, let's do a one-on-one. I was open to it. I didn't know what to expect, and it was quite a ride. I got really involved, and it's been really exciting. For the past few months, I've been working with them and others on the public power campaign in Queens. We just had our town hall about last week in Astoria, and that was really exciting. It was really great to start organizing so quickly after myself just getting involved and seeing so many people in the neighborhood, across the borough, even across the city, so excited about this campaign and so willing to learn more about DSA.
And we're also joined by Shay, who is not part of the Eco-Socialist Working Group, but is a comrade in the struggle against capitalism with Extinction Rebellion NYC. How did you get involved with Extinction Rebellion, and what kind of stuff have you been doing?
I got involved with Extinction Rebellion this past October. They had a really big week of action. Did a couple different shutdowns on Wall Street and in Midtown. And I've been a climate activist for a decade, but Extinction Rebellion was kind of the movement I was waiting for, something that's mass, global, and also using the tactics of nonviolent direct action to address the climate crisis, which I think is kind of where we're at. We've tried everything else. We've lobbied, we've petitioned, we've run candidates, we've done a lot of things, and nothing's worked. So to me, nonviolent direct action is kind of the strategy of the moment when we're dealing with this crisis. So that's why I'm involved with XR.
Yeah, we'll definitely be digging into a lot of that soon. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on all your favorite podcast apps. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com, and you can find all our past episodes on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. We've done a lot of coverage on public power if you really want to dig in deep or hear about any of the other amazing campaigns that New York City DSA is running across the city. And as always, you can find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we are talking about how corporate utilities, Con Ed, and National Grid are trying to raise our monthly bills in order to pay for frack gas pipelines being built across New York City. On February 28th, a couple Fridays ago, 10 members of Extinction Rebellion New York City were arrested for shutting down construction of National Grid's frack gas pipeline in North Brooklyn. National Grid is currently asking for a rate hike in order to use $185 million ratepayer dollars to finish the pipeline, which is currently under construction in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and soon heading into East Williamsburg and Greenpoint. So, Shay, you were one of those 10 individuals who shut down construction and then were subsequently arrested. Can you kind of walk us through a little bit about what happened that day?
Yeah, so it went off pretty perfectly as planned. There were 10 of us with a bunch of support roles. Usually when you do, you know, direct action, for every person who's risking arrest, you have at least, you know, one, but maybe more people who are in support, either jail support or media, or a police liaison, or, you know, kind of de-escalation roles. So we had a whole team of people, you know, so maybe 20 people showed up that morning. And, you know, we kind of practiced, we went through the plan, someone went out and scouted and kind of saw where the actual construction sites, were that they were working on that day. And when we were kind of ready to go, we left and, we walked up and just walked on site. We walked on, we kind of announced our presence while the bulldozers were going. We said, we're shutting this site down. We got our photo for social media with banners, and then we sat in the construction site. So they have this trench, you know, that's a couple feet wide where they're laying the pipeline. And we sat around it. The construction workers, you know, once they kind of fully got the picture, you know, that at first they were starting to continue work, and then they realized they had to fully shut down. And so, yeah, we sat there. They kind of moved down the block, because I think, you know, within the law, they can still do construction as long as they're a certain amount of feet away from pedestrians. So they kind of moved like 20 feet down the block and continued construction. So then we got up and then we walked over and just sat down again, where they were, you know, working to construct the pipe. And they fully got the idea that we weren't leaving. So then they kind of shut down construction on that block for the morning. Yeah, any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, how did, you know, workers react? And also kind of what was your message for the workers as well?
Yeah, we were definitely concerned going in that there would be some tension with the workers. And, you know, we wanted to be really clear that we weren't anti-worker. This isn't about them. You know, this is about National Grid, and about, you know, this corporation that's putting profit over the health and well-being of our people and planet. So we tried to engage a little bit in some conversation. They definitely weren't hostile. At times they were offering us water. We had some conversation about, you know, like, we're not against you. We're just against this pipeline, and we want you to be, you know, we want you to have good union jobs building wind and solar. And we had a chant, that we sang, which was like, pro union, pro planet, a just transition, we demand it. And so we were kind of like trying to be on the side of the workers and not have tension, which I think ended up working. They seemed pretty chill the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah, and how long did you shut down construction for, and do you think it was a successful action?
Yeah, we probably shut it down for about 3 hours, you know, most of the morning. I think it was successful. I mean, you know, we knew we weren't going to be able to be there the whole day, that police were going to show up and take us away. But I think it was a part of a larger campaign, which maybe we can talk more about, you know, which the DSA eco-socialists are working on, which Sane Energy is working on, you know, Sunrise, this whole coalition is trying to stop this pipeline. So it was, you know, just shutting down construction for one morning, but hopefully this is going to keep happening again and again. We're going to keep coming back. And with all these different diversity of tactics, we're going to stop it.
Yeah, that's something I'd kind of like to dig in a little bit more to. You know, one of the main tactics that Extinction Rebellion uses that you've mentioned is, you know, nonviolent direct action. Can you talk a little bit about that strategy and why XR felt like this was a good tactic right now in this fight to stop the North Brooklyn pipeline?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, for us, direct action has a long history of getting the goods, right? It's got a long history of winning campaigns. And, you know, usually when certain fights are at a certain point, you know, we've seen in the civil rights movement, we've seen in women's rights and gay rights, that direct action works. So, you know, we take our cues from a lot of those movements, from past struggles, mostly that have been led by, you know, people of color and marginalized folks, who have put their bodies on the line to, achieve justice. And, you know, we think that, these are the tactics that are necessary to move the ball forward on climate. So with this particular pipeline, it just seemed like a no-brainer. Like, you know, we knew that Sane Energy was out there fighting, you know, fighting this in the courts, fighting this, you know, with representatives, but the construction is happening every day. So it's like, let's just get out there and stop it. You know, let's, and it's a symbolic act as well as, you know, the actual stopping of the pipeline feels good. But when, you know, thousands of people see that you can just walk onto a site and just shut it down, you know, hopefully that's inspiring, and hopefully we're going to get more and more people out
You know, the next day you had a public rally and National Grid didn't show up to work. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, we kind of had this like 1-2 punch idea where, you know, we had seen in the past when Sane Energy had hosted these rallies that they just wouldn't show up to construct because they didn't want the kind of public confrontation. So we did the secret, you know, kind of clandestine shutting down with civil disobedience on a Friday, and then we called the public action for Saturday. So hoping we could shut it down for 2 days without actually getting people arrested on the Saturday, which we didn't need to do. They didn't show up to work again. We shut it down for 2 days, which was beautiful. But we know we're going to have to keep coming back. So that's really like the call to action right now is like, you know, anyone who's willing, you know, we spent 4 hours in a jail cell. It wasn't so bad, you know? So if you have the circumstances in your life where you're able to do that, you know, if you have, you know, some level of privilege to be able to risk arrest and get arrested, it's hugely helpful to stop this pipeline. It's going to get media attention. It's going to, keep moving the ball forward on this issue.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously the Eco-Socialist Working Group in New York City, DSA, calls out capitalism as, you know, a major problem, or one of the major drivers of climate change. How does Extinction Rebellion kind of, view capitalism as part of this issue of addressing, you know, climate emergency?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think most XR people are definitely anti-capitalists. I think, although it's not explicitly put forward, I think XR is not an explicitly anti-capitalist organization, which I personally, you know, I would love it to be. But I think the main way it manifests in XR's tactics is that they see the government particularly as being corrupt, being bought out by the fossil fuel industry, that capitalism has, you know, has totally hollowed out any chance of solving this crisis. And so the actual way forward is actually not through traditional government processes, but through what XR demands as citizens assemblies, which are, you know, very much, you know, kind of harkening back a little bit to Occupy style, that we want groups of people to come together to solve this crisis without a bought out government that's never going to be able to do it.
Cool. And so you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on all your favorite podcast apps. You can listen to past episodes of Revolutions Per Minute on revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. And as always, stay up to date on the socialist analysis of the news on our Twitter handle, which is NYC RPM. Today we are talking about how corporate utilities, Con Ed and National Grid are expanding pipelines in our communities during a time of climate crisis, and how New Yorkers are fighting back against that. We just heard from Shay from Extinction Rebellion about directly shutting down construction at those sites. But there is also another campaign that is currently catching a lot of fire and growing very quickly within New York, which is the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group Public Power Campaign. So I want to turn to you. I don't know, Iapa or Stylianos, like maybe Stylianos, if you want to take this first. Can you talk a little bit about the three bills that have been introduced as part of the public power campaign?
So we have three bills in the New York State Legislature right now, each which has a different component of our overall public power goals. Three bills, I won't give you the bill numbers, I'll tell you what they are. You can look them up at publicpower.nyc/bills. The first is to call for all generation and transmission for state and municipal owned property in New York to be 100% renewable. So every single government building, government property that currently uses power would be mandated to have 100% renewable power generation along with its transmission. The second, and this is a very brief summary. You can obviously read more online, but I want to make sure we get into the details a little bit later, I guess. The second bill is creating a right of first offer and refusal for NYPA. So there is a New York power authority which currently generates power in very limited circumstances across the state. This bill would allow NYPA to be the first entity to bid on, essentially, and create new generation in New York State. Right now, National Grid and a whole host of other energy companies do that. This would allow NYPA to do that first and also give NYPA advantages into matching previous bids from private companies. And then the third is really what we imagine, I think, publicly at least as public power, which would create the Downstate Power Authority. This would right now be limited just to Downstate, which includes a few counties. So think of like Westchester along with New York City. And this Downstate Power Authority would replace areas serviced by Con Ed, Central Hudson Gas and Electric, and National Grid Service. This is going to be the transmission utility. So, of course, there's the generation and transmission utilities. And a Downstate Power Authority is very crucial because in this bill, we have written in a few elements that would ensure democratic control. When we talk about public power, we're really nervous about expanding the current government and seeing authorities look like essentially the MTA and NYCHA, where governors and mayors appoint people to the boards that don't have the best interest of the people who are actually receiving those services. So in these bills, there are democratically elected boards of trustees who will be elected from service areas, and they will be the ones in charge of managing this authority and making critical decisions.
And so these bills, I think, were introduced sometime in January. We did a show about it at the time. What kind of progress has been made on this kind of legislative front, you know, as far as getting people to sign on? It seems like it's a campaign that's gaining steam very quickly.
Yeah, we've been using our town halls as a way to pressure our electeds to endorse, to co-sponsor our bills. So at Astoria recently, we had a town hall. It was a huge hit. There was about over 100 people there. We got Gennaro signed up. We got Casa Cantonese to co-sponsor it, and also Ron Kim. We had, since January, we've had we've had Cruz, Gennaro's, Barnwell, Arabella Simotas this month through the Queens Town Hall alone. We've also had, on the assembly level, we have Carol, Rosick, Mosley, Kim, Colton, Richardson, Gottfried Cook. We have a lot of people. Lental. And in the Senate, we have Salazar, Julia Salazar, who's our comrade, Miri, and Gennaro's. So it's gaining steam, and it's pretty exciting, and we're trying to keep the momentum going. We're having a Bronx town hall on the 23rd, and we're obviously going to invite some electeds there. We're going to have Wednesday town hall. I think that was it. Yeah. So we're currently just trying to get people to endorse us, co-sponsor our bills, and we're excited that it's, because we're only about a year old. This campaign's only about a year old. So to see it, and also we're having nice write-ups, like Brooklyners writing about us, and the press is covering us, and it's really gratifying and really rewarding to see people take us more seriously. Because when we started, we were kind of seen as like fringe and kind of not taken very seriously. But now like, we have more of a legitimacy. And as I said earlier, our groups are growing. They're growing pretty big in size, and we'll be launching our Lower Manhattan eco-socials work group pretty soon, I believe.
Yeah, you mentioned the Astoria Town Hall, which happened last week. I want to go to some sound from that town hall that happened in Astoria last week on public power.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out here today. It was about 6 months ago that I think we had our first town hall about public power. And we're back here in Astoria to have another one. So thank you for coming out. We've made a ton of progress. DSA has made a huge amount of progress. All of our coalition partners have made a lot of progress in just such a short amount of time. And now this is a discussion that people are having that they were not having a year ago. So we're really excited to talk to you about it right here in Astoria, where about half of the city's power is generated, dirty oil, dirty gas, and things that cause our kids asthma. So we're excited to talk to you about some of the progress that we plan on making with some of our partners and elected officials.
Yeah, we have seen Con Edison fail our neighborhood year after year. Whether it's what I affectionately call the Astoria Borealis, of just a few years ago. But even before that, we've seen blackouts and failures. And even this past summer, we had the head of Con Edison stand up and say, Con Edison will be ready for what is going to happen. And then we had the hottest month in the history of recorded history. And what happened? Roving blackouts, business owners and residents throwing their food out onto Ditmars Boulevard, them shutting off the power in Brooklyn and in environmental justice communities. We had no real good reason as to what was going on. And then we had, of course, it's only getting hotter and it's only getting wetter. So what did it end that particular heat wave? But a downpour that caused flooding in communities, damaged transformers, and yet Connison stood up there and said, we had it all under control. We called them in front of the city council, and they admitted that they made some mistakes and they want to rebuild our relationship. But we don't need to rebuild our relationship. We need to break up. We need, as we think about a renewable energy future, as we think about how we transform this borough, this city, away from fossil fuel infrastructure. Right? They 20 years ago, they opened 3 peaker plants at Ravenswood Generating, next to Queensbridge Houses, Ravenswood Houses, and Astoria Houses, and told the residents of public housing, we need reliability in New York City. And they opened these 11 power now plants throughout the city, all next to environmental justice neighborhoods with no environmental review, because we were told they're only going to be open for 3 years. I was in college back then, a little bit younger, wasn't in elective office, but 3 years they'll be open. 20 years later, they're old enough to vote. We still haven't seen those peaker plants close. But what we have seen is the asthma rates in those zip codes next to them skyrocket higher than the borough average of Queens. And as we think about the future of Rikers Island and the possibility of making that a renewable energy island, as we're pushing through in the city council right now, Renewable Rikers Act, to get 100 acres of solar with utility scale battery storage that can replace all that fossil fuel infrastructure. I don't want Con Edison to own that. None of us do. It needs to be publicly owned.
And I have a letter, the reason I'm carrying this envelope around is I have a letter I sent today to the leader of the Senate calling for public power in New York and calling for revenue to implement the truly Green New Deal by taxing the rich and making sure that the rest of us see the benefits of it. And so that is something that has gone out today, and we'll be happy to get that out to the rest of you. And there's also legislation that we are working on. There's, I think, 3 bills that the group is working on that I am working with the sponsors on to try and get through the legislature. So we are embarked on something that is a very significant and a cutting-edge type of way of doing this in New York. Like so much of what we've done and has been started right here in Western Queens, and this is yet another of those initiatives, which is to get people to reimagine how we run things and things that most people have accepted as true in the way of life, and oh, Con Ed is just in our lives and we got to deal with him. We're trying to break that frame of reference and start them thinking differently. And we're starting to do it in the field of housing, we're starting to do it in criminal justice, and we need to do it in the field of energy as well.
So that was from a public power town hall that the DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group held in Astoria last week. One of the first town halls that was held on public power was about 6 months ago in Astoria. And in that clip, you heard from council member Costa Constantinides saying that we need to break up with Con Ed. Also from Senator Mike Gennaris, who hadn't signed on to the public power bills up until that moment, actually at the town hall. So can you talk a little bit about how the Eco-Socialist Working Group has held these public power town halls to get elected officials on board, and also a little bit about where the locations have been chosen? You know, these are a lot of times in communities that have been dealing with Con Ed and National Grid. So can you talk a little bit more about these town halls and how you're using them as an organizing strategy?
Totally. So as some of you may know, last year, Con Edison, they cut the power to neighborhoods like Canarsie and Flatbush because they were deemed expendable. So we've been really working with those communities to let them know what's happening, to let them know that how they're perceived by Con Ed. So we've been having town halls there. We've had great organizers helping us there on the grassroots level. We've been inviting legislators to our town halls and just kind of mobilizing this population. Obviously, in Astoria, we did the same thing. Were you involved with the planning in that, Stylianos?
Yeah. And specifically with the Astoria Town Hall, one thing that we did I think was particularly successful was that town hall was held in essentially a senior center. It was a Hanek building that is pretty famous for having senior housing. One thing about public power that's happening all over the city is it's not just a DSA movement or a young people's movement or movement for people who are already engaged in the climate crisis politics. It's actually a movement that's been bringing in a lot of older people, mm-hmm. seniors especially, who live on fixed incomes, who deal with the threat of shutoffs, who frequently have medically necessary equipment running on electricity in their homes, have a lot of issues with Con Ed, have a lot of issues with paying their bills, have a lot of issues with utilities running a necessary thing in their lives. So when we have these town halls and we get to bring out seniors and we get to bring out people in the community who politicians don't normally see at DSA events, that's also sending a signal. We're organizing in your community. We're organizing people you don't always see at our rallies. We're organizing people who are going to vote. These people are likely going to vote for the candidate who shows up for the issues that these people care about. And that's been really meaningful. We got a lot of traction in Astoria. We got a lot of people signing up to join the Eco-Socialist Working Group, to join DSA, and it's been really exciting to see.
And yeah, can we maybe you talk a little bit more about, you know, what that community response has been to these town halls? There was, you know, previously a town hall in Astoria. It was like a crazy rainy day. It felt like, okay, this is climate apocalypse, like happening in real time. You had to like sludge through all this water just to get to the town hall, but it was still pretty packed. And then the town hall last week was packed. And obviously, you know, since that town hall 6 months ago, Con Ed is now raising rates and people are seeing that on their bills. And some of the things that they are investing in is to expand liquefied natural gas in Astoria, as well as expand a frack gas pipeline. What has been the community's reaction to Con Ed, both in Queens and then maybe also a little bit in Brooklyn, where these shutoffs have happened?
So people generally hate Con Ed. I've grown up and lived in the city all my life, and that's one universal constant in New York. People hate Con Ed. But specifically around public power, I can actually say about a couple months ago, I went to a community meeting to just make a brief announcement, let everybody know it's a town hall. And at that meeting, Con Ed was going to make a presentation. They were presenting about smart meters. And everybody, there were like 30, 40 people in the audience, all brought their Con Ed bills. And they were all there to complain to the Con Ed presenters. They didn't know it was going to be about smart meters. They were there to complain, why is my bill so high? Why is my bill getting higher? A lot of these people weren't even aware that there was a rate hike that was approved, by the way, by a government agency. And it was such ripe recruiting ground for public power, because I got to say, hey, we hate Con Ed. They're terrible. Come see what an alternative is. We're not just telling you we don't like Con Ed and we don't like fossil fuels. We're telling you here's an alternative for New York State to actually get rid of Con Ed and bring in renewables. And everyone was really, really receptive to that message. And that was at least Queens.
Yeah. And I've been canvassing a lot in Brooklyn and also in Queens recently. And that's the kind of angle we want to talk to them about, because otherwise we don't want to be too lofty and darky and talk about our bills. We just want to be like, hey, like, listen, How have you noticed Con Edison is screwing you over in terms of your bill rates? And that kind of gets their attention, and they have so much to talk about, and they're all equally outraged in every neighborhood, and they're very curious to hear about what we have to offer and what we're about. They tell you their stories, right? It's very intimate. They tell you the stories about, you know, their dad's apartment got, you know, the power got shut off this summer or last summer, and just how them as immigrants is hard for them, and it really humanizes and it really makes you see these people as really your comrades who are equally being screwed over by Con Edison. And then I just try to talk to them as a human. Like, listen, please come out to our town hall. We would love to hear your voice. Just you know, hear us out. And some of them have come out, and it's really heartening to see that. Yeah, and we've been doing that with in North Brooklyn as well, but we can get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk a little bit more, bring it back to the North Brooklyn pipeline in a second. I want to go to another clip, though. All of the DSA-endorsed candidates have embraced public power as part of their platforms, and one of those candidates was there at the Queens Astoria Public Town Hall, Zoran Mamdani. Let's hear from him what he had to say at the Astoria Town Hall.
So my name is Zohran Kwame Mamdani. I am a proud Queens DSA member, and I am also running for office in this very district for New York State Assembly. And I'm here tonight to talk about just how personal of an issue public power is for us here in Astoria, and how this needs to be at the forefront of all of our campaigns, no matter what they are, beyond eco-socialist. If we're running an electoral campaign, public power needs to be at the center of that. Now, I'm really, you know, when we talk about public power, I think we need to make the connection clear, as many speakers have done tonight, that our stance on public power is a logical extension of our ideology as democratic socialists, right? We believe that the state should provide whatever is necessary for people to live a dignified life. Heat and electricity, those are not optional things. Those are necessary things. They are alongside the needs of housing, of healthcare, of education. We cannot say that the market can determine who gets to be able to live in our city and who has to be priced out of it. So when we talk about public power, I want to just make that connection clear, that when we're fighting for this, we're fighting for dignity, and we're fighting this across all different markets, because our dream is a vision of this city, of this state, of this very neighborhood, where we don't have to be beholden to the whims of a privately held company whose number one purpose is to extract wealth from working class Astorians to deliver to stockholders and CEOs. Who's down with that? Are you guys down with that? Because today, I'm very proud to say that our campaign is a D-list campaign, right? And what I mean by a D-list campaign is that we launched our environmental platform today. And our platform is to decarbonize, decommodify, and democratize. Because those are the three things that we want to do with public power.
And so the Eco-Socialist Working Group has hosted numerous canvasses across New York City and Brooklyn and the Bronx with different DSA-endorsed candidates. Can you talk a little bit about how you're using those organizing canvasses as a strategy for this campaign, and also how important it is that DSA-endorsed candidates have made public power such an important electoral issue this year?
Sure. So first, I just want to plug this Saturday, we're going to do a joint Zohran and public power canvas in Astoria. It's going to be from 1 to 5, and Iyapa and I are actually both going to be co-leading that. I have overcommitted myself to doing it every Saturday, but I hope to see some of you there. But back to the broader issue, at least in Astoria, it's been really critical because we live right next to the Astoria Generating Facility, which has at least a third, some people have estimated a little bit around half, of New York City's total power. And it's really important for residents to see DSA-endorsed candidates talking about this as an issue that's critical to their campaign as well as to their constituency, because everybody feels those effects very immediately. A lot of them have kids and grandkids who grew up with asthma, or they themselves grew up with asthma because they live right next to these dirty fossil fuel generators. A lot of them don't have access to huge swaths of waterfront right next to their homes because they have to live next to power plants. Mm-hmm. And Zohran has been really, really fantastic about really featuring public power on his campaign. If you look at his flyers, his brochure, I should say, it is one of three issues out there. And he's also been really great about tying it into housing justice, which has been really critical for everybody to see that we talk about one thing with capitalism and socialism, one way in which we can improve our lives by decommodifying parts of our economy, parts of our world, that it actually ties into all of them. So that's been what I've seen, especially in Astoria, with the public power in our canvassing.
Yeah, and when we do canvass, we try to remind the residents that it is not normal to have a power plant in the neighborhood. You know, I think that it's become normalized, like Ravenswood or even the power plant on East 14th Street. It's bizarre, and there's been so many the story of Borealis, right? There's been all these so many incidents in which people just kind of, it's strange for a minute, and then they kind of proceed to go back to life, you know. And we've been trying to interrupt that thought process of like, listen, like this is actually really strange and bizarre. You don't live with it, and there are health consequences to this. And during Hurricane Sandy, the power plant on East 14th exploded, you know. And we're just trying to just speak to them from that angle. And yes, of course, we love our DSA comrades. And Boris, until recently, when he suspended his campaign, we were canvassing with him for public power. So I think right now with Marcella, we're trying to work with her and do some public power commissions with her. So it's been exciting. It's been great.
And DSA has also, the last two weekends, been canvassing along the North Brooklyn Pipeline, this pipeline that National Grid is currently building in Bushwick and soon will be entering East Williamsburg and Greenpoint. We have a clip of one of the responses of somebody who runs a business along that pipeline route.
So my name is Eric. We work at Lotus Cleaners on 80 Manhattan Avenue, and business gone low because of parking or customers not being able to park anywhere. So because of the pipeline, of course.
So Iapa, you have been out the last two weekends canvassing along the North Brooklyn pipeline route. What kind of has been the community's response to this pipeline that National Grid is building in their community?
I was pretty shocked to see just how they just automatically trusted the product. Like, oh yeah, they're just gonna, it's just replacing something, right? They just automatically assumed that it was just sad thinking, oh, okay, and it's normal business as usual. And we were like, actually, no, it's actually like a whole new infrastructure that they're building in your neighborhood. And once we got that, once we got their attention, they were kind of curious to learn more. Obviously, the vendors along Manhattan Avenue were all really pissed off. They were saying how it's disrupting the traffic. I mean, to be completely fair, we had one vendor that was like, actually, we're getting a lot more business from like the construction workers. You know, I'm like, all right, this is interesting to hear about. But yeah, we've been talking to vendors, and also this neighborhood. They already hate Con Edison as it is, and they, in terms of National Grid, they don't know. There's just a real confusion. They don't really know what it is, and they don't really know what's going on. They've been kept in the dark. As you may know, like National Grid didn't even notify the neighborhood until like a few hours before they started, and. And so we've been trying to tell them, hey, like this is actually new infrastructure that will that originates from Brownsville and will go all the way to Greenpoint, and it's carrying methane, which is highly volatile. And we right now they can't construct past Montrose Avenue, correct?
Yeah, they're requesting more money in their current rate hike to continue to build this pipeline.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just so for some, we had some people that are like, well, what's the point? They're already building. So and then we're like, actually, well, we can like at least delay it in some way. We could at least if we can do anything. Through our actions or through canvassing or whatever, through town halls, it's all worth it, right? But yeah, it is a real sense of just disinformation. It's just not knowing, right? And they were all there. Once we told them what was happening, their ears kind of perked up, and we had them, you know. So we're just trying to rally them and get the information for our eventual town hall.
And, you know, once you've kind of presented them with this problem, you know, of this pipeline in their neighborhood that National Grid did not let them know about, what was their response to the idea of like public power as a different option to what's currently happening?
Tricky part, right? Because once you have their attention, you're like, all right, well, this is what I'm trying to like get across. They're curious. I think obviously it's not really, they're not very concerned with bills and all that stuff, right? So, but we're trying to just parlay any curiosity into showing up. So we're trying to use the eventual town hall as a way where we can at least get them there physically, and then we can tell them more about our bills. Yeah, I've been trying, but they're just kind of, I guess the word curious is, yeah, they're like, okay, like, interesting. But they're more about like the pipeline. Hell no, that's kind of where they're standing. There's their that's kind of where they're at right now, which is completely fair.
Yeah, when I was kind of standing on the sidewalk when Extinction Rebellion was actually shutting down construction, I think the thing that piqued people's interest the most when I, you know, stopped to talk to them was like, hey, did you know your bill is about to go up to pay for this? Right. And people are like, are you serious? Like, this has been so annoying. This has, you know, been loud. The construction has been whatever. But knowing that they were actually going to be paying for it and National Grid didn't have the courtesy to let them know that, definitely seem to resonate with people. We've got about 15 minutes left of the show, so we're going to open up our phone lines soon. You know, if you have thoughts about Con Edison, if you have thoughts about National Grid, please give us a call and let us know what they are. You can call in at 212-209-2877. You know, everybody out there is paying bills. You know, what are your ideas about public power? And again, that number is 212-209-2877. And before we go to a caller, Shay, I kind of want to bring you back in. How do you see, you know, what Extinction Rebellion is doing with shutting down construction? Kind of how does that relate to this bigger campaign with public power?
Yeah, like I said before, I think we just need a diversity of tactics. I think if we want any hope of turning this climate emergency around, we need everything, you know. And I'm a huge fan of what the DSA is up to. I'll probably be at an eco-socialist working group meeting soon. The way I kind of see it is these two overlapping spheres of, you know, like where Extinction Rebellion is kind of, you know, we're doing these like holding actions. You know, we're kind of like we're trying to DSA is working on the solutions. Excuse me, the bad stuff. The DSA is working on the solutions. They're working on the structural alternatives that we need if we're going to have a thriving and sustainable world.
All right. We have our first caller. Caller, you are live now on WBAI.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the work that Extinction Rebellion is doing, putting their, you know, doing all of that, stopping workers and yet supporting the union people. Just excellent strategy. I just wanted to say that Bernie Sanders is not going to win today or next Tuesday, and he may not lose New York as well. And so I would suggest that we use him now as for this public power issue. I heard that, you know, he had said that he did not want to take the means of production away from the grocery stores. However, he did say he wanted to do something about the fossil fuel industry. So we need to press him to speak about issues like, for instance, the public owning the utilities, as this wonderful man had just spoken, and you, of course, agreed. Host of the show, I appreciate you, and so we need to press him on that point and other points. And at the next debate, I would suggest anybody that has some contact, Bernie Sanders should say, when somebody asks him one of these foolish questions as they had in the past, he should say, "I'm not answering that question. I'm going to give you this answer to the public's questions. This is what the public want to hear the answer to, and here is the answer." He should command the debate. You know what? That might turn the whole thing around, and he could possibly win and then bring to fruition some of the things that the people want.
So thank you for that. I just want to say, first of all, I still believe, and I and many others were phone banking and text banking, and I think I'm still out here hoping for really good results tonight because we have to do the work and hope. But second, I'm actually really proud to say that Bernie Sanders has called for a federal takeover of electricity production, and he's actually had several events, rallies, and social media and public internet posts where he's publicly called for essentially public power. So I'm really proud to say that, and I love your idea of bringing that more to the forefront of his campaign and having folks who are engaged in his campaign right now, as things change and as they wind down, whether or not he's the nominee, we're going to need them working towards this issue, and we're going to need to continue this work this year and next year because it's a nationwide issue. While we're really excited about the progress we're seeing in New York, we're going to need to make sure nationwide, every single state, like Nebraska, has public power, is moving toward renewables, and we're tackling the climate crisis together.
Yeah, and well, Joe Biden still supports fracking. And make sure you tune in later tonight at 9 o'clock. Jack Devine will be on to have the Revolutions Per Minute version of election coverage. We have another caller on the line. Caller, you are now live on WBAI.
Thank you. You're pushing so hard from the bottom. The bottom up. That's so great. Con Ed keeps trying to get in and put smart meters. Is there a lawyer that can fight them? I mean, they try like weasels to get in, you know, in the energy room. And we don't want smart meters. We don't like Con Ed, but the thing about them also, they have all this profit, $12 billion a year, and then they say they're going to do this, going to do that. They could have applied that for these years to segueing into green energy. But they're just talking. They're not. They just give you, you know, they think we're stupid, I guess. But they're going to lose, you know, this whole movement has to succeed. It's definitely going to succeed.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, in the rate hike that was just approved by New York State, a lot of that money is smart meters, as well as we were talking about, you know, expansion of frack gas pipelines in Astoria and the Bronx and investments in liquefied natural gas. You know, I'm not sure as far as a lawyer, but I would definitely recommend, you know, calling Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, because both the city and the state were parties to that rate case and approved it and did not fight smart meters and did not fight frack gas infrastructure. And right now, you know, there's still a National Grid rate case going on that both New York State and New York City are a part of. So if you have thoughts, you know, this is the time to get our, you know, government in line with what the people want. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
Unfortunately, I also don't have a recommendation to the lawyers besides reaching out to folks maybe at Legal Aid or NILPI, New York Lawyers for Public Interest. But I do want to say, with regards to smart meters and with regards to what you were just talking about, this is a great example of the way the state enables this private company to have so much control over our lives, that they're trying so hard to get into private spaces in your building, that they're ignoring the people who live there, what they want. And they're just so desperately trying to say, here, let's put the smart meter in, which you don't want, which frankly, I think is going to be better for Con Ed and not necessarily better for you. It's completely unfair. It's an invasion of our private lives, and it's something where New York City and New York State, we've given Con Ed the keys to the lives of so many people. We've given them the power to do this to us. We have to take it back.
And yes, can you maybe talk a little bit about some of the canvases coming up or the public power town halls coming up? If people are interested in learning more about this, how can they find out more?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, we're having our second Bronx Town Hall in a few weeks, and we're currently planning our North Brooklyn Town Hall. Is State Energy co-hosting that? I think they are. So that will be exciting, and we'll be inviting a lot of legislators there. Check us out at publicpower.nyc. We have our monthly meetings once a month, our citywide meetings. Come and sit down and hear us out. Our next meeting is this Thursday at 7 p.m. at Abrams Art Center on the Lower East Side. We would love to have you and just plug you in.
And Shay, if people want to get more involved in Extinction Rebellion, how can they find out more?
Yeah, so just an easy next step. Tomorrow night we have our Extinction Rebellion Action Roundtable, where we're going to be doing some more pipeline blockade action planning and also planning for the big Earth Day, Earth Week. A lot of big actions happening around the city. So that's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at 32 East 4th Street, buzzer number 5. And you can also just check out Extinction Rebellion NYC on Facebook for upcoming events.
And before we head out, you know, any final thoughts about public power, you know, how Con Ed, National Grid is affecting people's lives? Final words?
Yapa kept talking about how everyone accepts what's currently going on as normal, and that was really important to me, because everyone thinks, when I talk to them about public power, especially in government and political circles, thinks that this is some crazy campaign and it's impossible. I really, really cannot emphasize enough, what we currently have is crazy. What we currently have should have been considered impossible. Public power, what we're trying to do, there is no actual structural obstacle to it besides the legislature voting for it tomorrow and requiring NYPA to create renewable generation and creating an authority that would simply, it would take money, absolutely, and other legal questions, but that can take Con Ed out of New York City, that can remove these private companies that have been acting as parasites on our energy control. This can happen tomorrow. We can begin taking the steps now to solve the climate crisis. What's currently happening is not normal. We can create something that's normal.
Mm-hmm. And really fast, just to say that, never forget that Con Ed spends $200 million funding climate denying groups. So every time you pay your Con Ed bill, you're paying against your own health and well-being. Thank you.
Yeah, and I was actually at a National Grid hearing. National Grid has put forth this long-term proposal for New York's energy solutions, which includes things like the Williams Pipeline, which New Yorkers have submitted tens of thousands of comments against, and New York State has stopped twice. And their president, John Bruckner, was there, and apparently he makes something like $4,000 an hour. You know, so that's coming from our ratepayers. And, you know, instead of presenting a future that's viable, National Grid spent all this money, which is probably, you know, actually our money, because all their money comes from ratepayer dollars, presenting these options that don't match the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, that don't match Local Law 97, that go straight up against climate science and would mean more fracking in Pennsylvania. And a lot of people that got up to speak in Long Island, which, you know, is not the most, you know, as far as areas of New York go, is not, you know, a bastion of progressiveness, you know, can be very conservative. And multiple people got up and said that all the whole thing was a sham that National Grid was presenting, and said, you know, what we're actually going to do is take you over. So I think this is an idea that's catching on with people very quickly. And, you know, as we face this climate crisis, is actually a solution that really touches people very much in their everyday lives. You know, we all are paying Con Ed bills. We're all paying National Grid bills. So it doesn't take that much to, you know, find something different. So make sure, you know, you can listen to past episodes we've had on public power, keep tuning in to Revolutions Per Minute, and make sure you tune in to WBAI tonight from 9 to 10 for Revolutions Per Minute coverage of the election results tonight. And we'll talk to you all next week.